Hello listeners, welcome to the latest episode of Simply Save podcast. International investing has been gaining popularity among mutual fund investors. Investors want to take geographical diversification. They now understand the importance of having investment in stocks and sectors that might not have any comparable investments in domestic markets. But international markets are also going through their own phase due to changes in these countries' own economies. At the same time, the number of international products out there has gone up significantly. Several mutual funds are launching international funds, whether it's in the fund of fund mode or whether it is as ETFs or whether it is funds with a certain specific investment theme. Today, we are joined by Tridip Bhattacharya of Edelweiss Mutual Fund, who is the co-CIO equity out there and has also spent several years as an analyst as well as a portfolio manager tracking Asian emerging markets as well as developed markets. He will be talking to us about what kind of geographical diversification should investors look at when looking at international funds, and also what is happening in international markets right now that investors should be aware of. Hi, Tridip. Welcome to our latest episode of Simply Save podcast. I hope you're fine. Hope all well.
Hi. Thanks for having me on your show. Absolutely.
Yeah, so Tridip, you have worked in international market as an analyst as well as portfolio managers across emerging markets as well as developed markets. We wanted to first ask you, in your opinion, how are Asian emerging markets currently placed right now vis-a-vis developed markets? And, you know, therefore, what kind of geographical diversification do investors need right now?
I think it's a great question to start. I would say that the Asian emerging markets are quite a diverse bunch. Whether you look at China, India, or Korea, Taiwan, they are going, all of them are kind of, you know, in their stage of development. So on one hand, while China is basically in the middle of a climb up the ESG curve by reducing dependence on highly polluting sectors like chemicals to taxing some of the supernormal profits made by edtech and fintech companies. On the other hand, countries like that of India are promoting the PLI scheme or the growth schemes and trying to kickstart the growth engine. On the other side, companies like Korea and Taiwan are at the moment suffering from the chip shortages, which is impacting the whole of the world. So on net balance, if I put such diverse bunch together, I would say that Asian emerging markets are a hotbed of earnings upgrades to come through, particularly in the context of in the global markets. In the developed markets, I would particularly point your listeners' attention to United States, which in my opinion, along with being a hotbed of innovation, is currently under the influence of a massive infrastructure stimulus, as much as 27% of GDP, which will likely to flow through corporate financials over the next few years. So while I can't give you recommendations, the point of mentioning the diversity of developed markets like United States and a few emerging market countries is to highlight for investors or potential investors that geographic diversification is certainly the way to go after or go for in coming years, particularly for investors who want to kind of, you know, achieve alpha over a period of next 3-5 years.
You know, that point is well taken. Also, Tridip, in your, you know, discussion and your points that you made right now, you also spoke about US markets. Now in US, how likely is tapering of the stimulus that US Fed has started, how likely it is to unwind it, and, you know, what could be the potential fallout of this on emerging markets like us and, you know, even other Asian emerging markets?
The first thing that I would highlight is that there is a knee-jerk reaction, which implies stronger dollar money flow out of emerging markets, etc., which is obviously negative for emerging markets. However, not more than a couple of weeks later, people settle onto the second level of thinking, which is trying to understand the increase in interest rates, or for that matter, the money flowing out, is it happening out of sync with the earnings growth estimates of the companies? In other words, ultimately, if the interest rate starts going up out of sync or faster than how the earnings estimates are growing, that would mean a concern for emerging markets in a genuine basis, and you will see money flowing out. However, if I look at the scenario today, I would say that the earnings estimates, as I mentioned in the earlier question as well, the earnings estimates in India and other emerging markets are in a fairly good clip, are growing faster than the interest rate increase that might actually stand to happen, which will bring on tapering. So net-net, I would say that as long as earnings estimates are intact, tapering is not too much of a concern. If it turns out to be that we have a major movement in interest rates, that would mean a bit of an issue, a bit of bother for countries. But at the moment, we are not in that scenario.
Right. Also, wanted to ask you about China, more specifically. You know, Chinese economy is seeing some hiccups. We saw, you know, the regulatory concerns that came up on the education technology sector there, as well as, you know, Evergrande episode, the real estate sector also facing some heat. Edelweiss has, you know, several international funds. One of them is the Edelweiss Greater China Fund. So what would be your advice to investors that have exposure to this fund?
And let me start first in terms of what China is actually up to. I would summarize saying that China is in the middle of a climb up the ESG curve, where they are trying to reduce on one side the dependence on polluting industries like that of chemicals, while on the other side, socialism in the form of taxing the edtech and or the fintech companies, so to speak. And this is a meaningful transition which the government, because it's a planned economy, is going at a certain pace. So in that context, we have actually faith in our partner JP Morgan that they have taken adequate care and due diligence in choosing the business model that are placed on sectors which are not impacted by these regulations. And based on our understanding, that continues to be the case. So we feel fairly confident that while investors in Greater China Fund or overseas get a good bit of currency as well as region diversification and a play on China as a growing economy, but at the same time, because we all are bottom-up investors, including JP Morgan, we have been able to weed out to the extent possible the impact of these regulations on the fund. So I'm fairly confident that we can manage this quite well overall.
Also, Tridip, when looking at, you know, global investment opportunities, we have several themes that are globally available that, you know, Indians can't play in their domestic markets, as well as obviously there is the matter of geographical regional diversification that international funds offer. So what in your sense are some of these new innovative themes that, you know, Indian investors should be investing right now, as well as what are the regions that would be apt for Indian investors to take an appropriate amount of geographical diversification?
I think, first of all, global investing itself has multiple legs to grow, in my opinion, from where we are. So while SEBI has a certain amount of limit to the extent that we can put money overseas, I think that is on the way up and it's a multi-year phenomenon that will continue to happen. And I feel bullish about the same primarily for three reasons. First, I think, which is the obvious, that from an investor standpoint, they can diversify the country risk. For instance, in India, what happens if something happens to Modi? If you invest in global funds along with your India fund, then to a large extent, you are diversified from those kind of risks. Second, I think Indians today are far well-traveled and want to get exposure to business models that are not there in India, but they have experience in overseas. For instance, pure electric vehicle plays, vegan food retailers, OTT players, Airbnb players, and finally, unique business models like Taiwan Semi, the Semiconductors, which is a Chinese company, LVMH, which is the ladies listener would kind of appreciate, Louis Vuitton, Shimano, which makes bicycles, Keynes, which is a Japanese company. These are all unique business models which are not there at the moment in India and probably one of their kind globally. So by investing globally, or global funds, they can get exposure to such areas, which is otherwise not possible. So that would be the second key thing why in global investing, in my opinion, is likely to be strong. The final bit is to achieve currency diversification. At the end of the day, you know, we have seen bouts of rupee volatility year in, year out. I think by investing in multiple countries, to a certain extent, the currency risk is also diversified, which is also a meaningful source of return from an investor standpoint. So on net balance, while India remains a hotbed of alpha creation, global investing can add another layer to the same.
Sure. Thanks, Tridip. Thanks a lot for joining us today and sharing your insights. We hope our listeners would benefit from these insights and, you know, take it ahead and, you know, gain in their own financial journey.
Thanks for having me on the show. Enjoyed your questions.
That was all the time we had for today's podcast. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in, and keep listening to Simply Save. For any feedback, do write into us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news and views, log on to moneycontrol.com.